This is session number 65, recorded on February 16, 2009. We're continuing with Scott analyzing the Dobbs Quadrant, the Dobbs Quadrant. So we've done two sessions, so Will couldn't make it tonight, so maybe he'll come the next time. He listened to the last two, and he's ready to participate when he gets back. Okay, so what do you say, Scott? What do we want to look at now?
Well, I was just noticing up on Rai, Eli, Too Lofty, and Bob. Bob's color is green, but we know Bob's color is purple. But when you did this chart, your color was green, wasn't it?
Yes, it was always green. But the I was purple. The chart was done in 94, 95, and that was when I took over Carolyn's email and got purple. She went on online before I did, or, you know, got an email before I did, and she picked the name purple. So then I get on a few months later, and she started using her Physicians Online email, which is holiopharm@polphysiciansonline.net. It was a better situation to do it that way. So I just took over her email, purple@ingress.com. So I was purple and green the same year. But the neat thing is that purple and green seem to be Zappa's colors. And so I don't mind having purple and green, and why not have two colors? So purple would be, isn't that ultraviolet? Isn't that maybe the hexadic? I don't know. That's it's off the grid.
Yeah, I guess so.
Infrared? No. What's that? Ultraviolet, indigo? It's not part of this orange, red, blue, yellow, green. So I would say purple points to the hexadic, the sixth level.
Right.
You could call it the indigo.
I think there's violet in the rainbow. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but there's only five.
Well, no, there's seven. There's seven colors in the rainbow, isn't there?
Yeah, there's seven, but there's only five here on the chart, and so
right.
The hexadic is what the chart's pointing to. So let's call the hexadic purple, because me propagating for the hexadic has always been through the color purple.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, is that all I got on that?
Yeah. But, because also you only had room for five of the notes in the musical scale or in the octave, because it ends on sol.
Yeah.
But I guess that's just because there's only five quadrants.
Yeah.
So
that's
maybe
almost arbitrary. You
maybe
know.
You want to assign a note to the hexad.
Well, that would be the big note.
Oh, right.
This chart's the tiny note.
Yeah.
We use Zappa's big note.
Right.
And he and Zappa defined gestalt as something big. So the gestalt note, the final pattern, will be obvious when we move into the hexadic.
Mm-hmm.
The pattern of where all this was leading towards.
Right.
So, did I ever explain Harlot's Ghost Part 2?
Go ahead. Do it. Go ahead.
Did I do it before?
Well, we got into it a little bit, yeah, but I don't remember the details, so go ahead.
Well, Harlot's Ghost.
I mean, I think it's cool you have it in there because you have, I'm blanking on his name. Who's the author?
Norman Mailer.
Norman Mailer, yeah. You have him in your top down, bottom up chart, and then you name him explicitly, you know, as an author. But in this chart, you don't name him explicitly, but then you have this book that he actually never published.
Right. Harlot's Ghost, the part one, came out in the early 90s. And then we were waiting for Harlot's Ghost, and it never happened. And so when I made the chart, we were still waiting. And so then when it never happened, we have to figure out what it means. Why is it in there? I mean, Harlot's Ghost Part 2, if it had happened, would have been what was coming. So the Dobbs Quadrant is showing the effects preceding the causes. So Harlot's Ghost is a cause, part two, how this goes, part two is a cause, and we're looking at the effects of it before it shows up, and this chart is about effects preceding causes. The Android meme is miming cold fusion. It says up the top, causes merging with effects, causes in quotes. You have to go to page 137 of Take Today, the book by McLuhan and Barry Nevitt, to read it, the bottom section, bottom paragraph, bottom couple of lines. the why causes in quotes. But anyways, the chart that Dobbs is miming the future, the cold fusion hexatic breakthrough, and so I put in Harlot's Ghost as something that was to indicate something that was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Simple.
But he did his last book might have been Harlot's Ghost too. He just didn't give it that title.
Yeah, I don't know if I've talked about that. There's a whole story. Don't know if I want to go into it, but
it's a kind of secret. It's almost Secret Council of Ten kind of stuff.
No, oh, his book?
Yeah.
No.
Well, it's espionage intrigue kind of stuff.
I'd say it's about Rai.
Oh.
Because it's about Lucifer, Satan.
Ah.
It's about one of his agents confesses how he created, how they, Lucifer and his agents, created Hitler.
Right. But that has no bearing on Harlot's Ghost 2, Part 2.
Well, this is how we say it. I mean, we've got Rai, which is the first Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
Here. Yeah, we're doing it right now. Yeah, that's all right. So,
Connie makes a noise for the Dob Quadrant.
Scott says you're making a noise, doing background vocals for the Dob Quadrant. Yeah. Okay, so I bought, I went to a market, a flea market, kind of a flea, but you know, what kind of market is that on Saturday? Farmer's market. Yeah, and they call it a swap meet and a lot of crafts, Carolyn says. So I bought a really neat print of Captain James Cook, Captain Cook's roots. And the roots of his traveling around the world and eventually finding Hawaii. And then there's a smaller print which shows him trying to map out Hawaii, shows his erratic roots around the islands. But the big island is called Owhyee. 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 I have to find out what it means. It seems to be, there's a new chart of the Sandwich Islands, including Owhyee, where Captain Cook was killed on Sunday, the 14th of February, 1779. That's the reason I bought it, because it was Saturday the 14th. I thought, well, I'm finding out about these maps. And it's the day he died, so maybe that's significant, so I bought them. But the thing is that Owhyee, O-W-H-Y-H-E-E, is the closest I've ever seen to the word Rai.
Hmm.
So maybe, I've got to ask Worcester, maybe Rai comes out of Hawaiian culture. Since the Evering said that the Kahuna Hawaiian healing methods, their shamans, is the closest residue to ancient healing techniques.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the ancient techniques are pretty well lost, but the closest to what they were is in the Huna religion, the Huna methods here in Hawaii. So as I was defining Rai as the first priest, so it's interesting that you got the first priest, echoes of the first priest, and Rai refers to something way back in the Hawaiian term Owhyee. Maybe that's how they're spelling Hawaii. Maybe that's what that means. Yeah, because that the big island is called Hawaii, so that's the original spelling of Hawaii.
Hawaii.
Hawaii with a V. Hawaii, but Owhyee. So Hawaii has Rai in it, and that's where Rai died. I mean, you know, what's his name? Ralph Doobie died in Hawaii. And that's interesting. Anyways, I just discovered this thing I'm going to look further into.
Mm.
Hawaiian connection to Rai.
Very good.
So, back to Harlot's Ghost. So, Lucifer is a priest, high priest. And the whole high priest action, Lucifer wanted to improve the world. He wanted to improve heaven. And so he rebelled against the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
went on a healing mission, a reform mission. So Harless Ghost, Norman Mailer, I saw him speak 10 months or 12 months before he died. At least 11, not 12 months. So he said, someone asked him, why didn't Harlot's Ghost Part 2 show up? And he said he was preparing to write it after Harlot's Ghost came out. And Harlot's Ghost showed that Harlot's Ghost Part 1 ended with just before the Kennedy assassination. So it seemed that he was going to go into the Kennedy assassination and deal with Oswald in Part 2. The book kind of, Part 1 ends around just before 1963, if I remember right. And so we would see him go into that in Part 2, we assume. But a couple years later, a book he brought out on Oswald, might have been called Oswald's Ghost.
Yeah.
Oswald's Ghost, where he went into, with another author, they got KGB files and stuff for when Oswald was in the Soviet Union. And he decided that Oswald did it alone. He was capable of doing it and did it. So that outraged all the assassination researchers who believe in a conspiracy bigger than Oswald. And Mailer had been part of that camp, you know, for 30 years. And so he did a turnabout, and people didn't like that. So years later, I had been thinking, oh, maybe Oswald's Ghost is Harlot's Ghost Part 2. But I never read it. So here I am in 2006 or so. Let's see when he died. He's speaking, promoting his latest book, which was, better find out what it is. What's it called? Some book, Cathedral in the Forest? So he died November 10th, 2007, just over a year ago, and I saw him in January 2007, and the title of the book is The Castle in the Forest. And so this person in the question period, after he reads a section, I had been leafing through the book while he was reading it, and I noticed there was at some point there, the agent was explaining that the computer had scattered, the computer environment had kind of confused Lucifer a little bit, and so because Lucifer was distracted by the new computer environment, this employee of Lucifer took the opportunity to write a book and expose how he had worked for Lucifer and what they'd done in raising Hitler. He was saying he had a window of opportunity because Lucifer wasn't noticing books anymore. He was worried about or dealing with the computer environment.
Right.
So when I just happened to notice that idea in the book somewhere, I remembered that he had done a Rolling Stone interview in the early 70s. And he, you know, he'd always been talking and arguing with McLuhan. And he said in the interview, it was there, in my mind it was there, in Rolling Stone, he said that maybe technology is confusing and distracting or going beyond the battle, traditional battle between God and the devil. It was a new factor that was even screwing them up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting question that he raised back in the early 70s that relates to McLuhan stuff. So I always remembered that. So here was a update of that in this new novel where the guy was, Lucifer's agent was saying, hey, Lucifer's a little scattered by the computer, preoccupied with it, so we'll take advantage of that. So it's like Mailer had this idea for 30 years. What was that? Yeah, 30 or more years, he was consistent with what he had raised in the early 70s. And maybe that was an argument embedded in his novels in the 60s. I haven't read many of his novels. So so I'm thinking about that. And what else? And the guy's asking the question. So Mailer said that he was getting ready to do Harlot's Ghost Part 2, and he gathering his research. But just before he was going to start it, an angel appeared to him, or the writer's muse, something. He implied something. He saw something. Or maybe it's just in his mind, but this thing stopped him from going into the room, his writing room, and to start the novel. Said, no, don't do it.
Huh.
So he took the spiritual advisor or spirit or whatever, took its advice and waited for inspiration to do something else. And now we go to Ron Rosenbaum. I'm going to look up him on, get the date of his book, Ron Rosenbaum. Okay, here it is. Explaining Hitler, 1998. Explaining Hitler, the search for the origins of his evil. So Ron Rosenbaum was a well-known journalist who investigated the Kennedy assassination, did some key articles. He's the one who, as a journalist, discovered the Skull and Bone Society in the 70s, I guess, early 80s. He used to write for the Village Voice, but then he went on to many other magazines in the New York Zone. He wrote for Esquire, Harper's, High Times, Vanity Fair, and New York Times Magazine. He was the dope columnist, the anonymous dope columnist for High Times. So I knew Ron and had always tracked what he thought was happening in the Kennedy assassination investigations. And so he worked on a book for like a long time, 10 years, and finally came out in 98, where he interviewed all the different people, different theories about why Hitler happened. And I remember scanning the book. I have it, but I haven't read it. But before I bought it, I was looking at it, and I noticed he skipped over the idea that radio, the McLuhan idea that radio created Hitler. I don't think it even got mentioned, or if it did, it was just brushed aside by something. So not much happening on the McLuhan level. And Rosenbaum never liked McLuhan. He always put down McLuhan. So I noticed that, and I said, he's missing the radio technology aspect. So that's almost 10 years before I hear Mailer talking. And Mailer says that he waited around for a couple of years. So he's talking about writing Harlot's Ghost, 95, 96, 97, somewhere in there, middle 90s. So the book comes out in 98. So he says he read Ron Rosenbaum's book, and he said it was an excellent book, but that Rosenbaum had left out something. Mailer was inspired by something that was left out of Rosenbaum's book in terms of looking at Hitler. So, remember, the origins of the, what's it called? The search for the origins of his or Hitler's evil. In main title, Explaining Hitler. So he's saying there was something Ron missed, and that inspired him to write a novel giving his version of how Hitler happened. So I'm listening to him say that and say, I bet you he picked up on the McLuhan angle, on the technology angle. And I'm thinking that because he talks about how Lucifer got distracted by the computer. He brings this technological effect into the novel and explaining why the Satan employee could get away with writing the book. So I was thinking all that, and I was glad I was at that book launch, because I wouldn't have heard the answer to a question I'd puzzled about. I mean, this person asked, where was Harlot's Ghost Part 2? So if Rai is the fountain of evil and good, and the search for the origins of Hitler's evil, that would be Rai, but what is Rai? And this chart is trying to show, my chart's trying to show, explain evil and what's going to happen to it. And it has definite technological base. So someday I'll read maybe Mailer's last book to see if it fits in. But Mailer had said some interesting things. He's always been interested in the afterlife. He says he goes on the principle that when we die, we end up in a ticket line, like at the post office. We have to take a number and wait in line at a bureaucracy, wait till we're given our assignments or something. So he imagines that it's bureaucratic on the astral plane as well as just as it is here. So a bland, bureaucratic boring pecking order. So, in retrospect, it was good to put Harlot's Ghost in there, Harlot's Ghost Part 2, because it was put in for the reason that it meant that Dobbs is talking about something that hasn't arrived yet, and showing how the Android meme is pointing to that, right? So, now, though, two years ago, I got an extra take on where Harlot's Ghost came from, or where it went, and what replaced it. In a way, the main character, at the end of the cathedral and the castle in the forest, after they rise up Hitler and he creates World War II and all that, the book ends with the Lucifer's team moving to America. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So,
Project Paperclip.
What?
Project Paperclip.
Yeah, and CIA, and just saying that America was now going to be possessed and become the new evil. That is assumed when you take that ending, and that fits Mailer's complaints about America all through his career. So he's projecting that. What was I going to say about that? That he's projecting that Hitler. So the novel Harlot's Ghost Part 1 is about the evil CIA and the oligarchy behind it, and the double agents and blatant espionage, insider treachery. That's what Harlot's Ghost Part 1 is about, and it actually, if you look at the cathedral in the forest and its theme that Hitler comes to America, then Harlot's Ghost Part 1 is what happens to America. But it was written before the cathedral, which gives the background to what happened in America after World War II. So they do relate. Harlot's Ghost Part 2 was not a follow-up. It was showing what was the preceding ground for Harlot's Ghost Part 1. I mean, the cathedral in the forest is the follow-up, but it's about the previous, the effects before the causes, or the causes before the effects, depending on how you define those terms. So you following what I'm saying?
Yep. And Lucifer was the prince of the air, and air is broadcast radio, broadcast TV, and the computer would confuse that.
Yeah, and that's McLuhan calling, pointing out. He pointed out that the Prince Lucifer was a superlative electrical engineer, master of software and hardware, and prince of the air. So definitely Mailer would be tuned into the technological levels that McLuhan was getting at. So that fits the chart. So to bring up Mailer and Harlot's Ghost is totally appropriate in the Dobbs Quadrant, and I was blessed to go and see the denouement and hear the explanation.
Well, and then just to harken back to something you said earlier, there's a little coincidence here. In December the 4th, 1963, Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, and Bob's Android Memes in Ockerney. Bob walked up Portland Street with Flaps, who was only 14 years old, and Flaps says, "I don't think Oswald killed Kennedy," and Dobbs says, "Oh yeah, he shot Kennedy." And Flaps says, "Are you sure?" And Dobbs says, "Yes."
Well, if you read, go through the diaries, you will find I did a lot of lying to those kids.
Mm.
And remember, Harlot's Ghost Part 1 is about me and Connie. Have we ever talked about that?
Yeah. Well, not in detail. Go ahead.
The characters in the novel. Let me just, since I haven't read it in a long time, let's get the... There's probably a summary of it on Wikipedia, so I'll bring up the characters' names. Harry, I think, was the guy based on me, and I can't remember his... Etheridge or something was the name of... his girlfriend, lover, wife, and all that. Okay, so we look up Norman Mailer. I just knocked it off, so we have to go back. Norman Mailer. Go down to the book. Castle in the Forest. Okay. No, it's not that one. Sorry. Harlot's Ghost, number one. a summary. At first, it appears to be the autobiography of Harry Hubbard, that's the guy based on me, which is made up of anecdotes of his adventures in the CIA. The very beginning of the book starts with Harry being told by a friend that his mentor, Hugh Montague, also known as Harlot, has either been assassinated or committed suicide on his boat. He then is told by his wife, Kittredge, note the K for Connie, Kittredge, that she has been unfaithful and is in love with another man. Emotionally worn, he goes to Russia. It is there that he rereads the dense manuscript of his life at the CIA, whose working title is, quote, The Game, unquote. At that point, the book really begins. We go through his life, including his relationship with his father and with his then-lover, Kittredge, and all the other people with whom he worked. The book appears to be many things, a thriller, a character study, a treatise on CIA life and its hardships, even a romance novel. The book ends in 1963 with the words, to be continued, a pledge the author never fulfilled, but maybe he did. Let's see, it says, although the novel was unfavorably received by most critics, Louis Menand and John Simon, a distinguished minority, for example, Christopher Hitchens, Anthony Burgess, Wilford Sheed, Salman Rushdie, and John W. Aldridge, considered it among Mailer's finest fictions, if not, as in the cases of Aldridge and Hitchens, his masterwork. So, Harry Hubbard is based on me, and Kittredge is based on Carolyn. So, what happened was, Walter Bowert read the novel. He was a friend of L. Fletcher Prouty. L. Fletcher Prouty and Walter talked about the book, and Prouty said that he had written Norman Mailer and named the CIA guys that Mailer was giving different names to. He could name all but one. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Fletcher Prouty. And Mailer said, you got all but one. And the one he missed was me. And so Walter writes that in the points that out at the end. I mean, Walter didn't know until I told him. But Walter uses that as his punchline in his second edition of Operation Mind Control. He tells that story.
Mm-hmm.
And then tells people to read my book, Fatty Communion.
Mm.
So it's about MK Ultra and all those phases. And let's see. So knowing that Harlot's Ghost was about me, I was interested in what he was going to do with part two, right?
Now, of course, he didn't know you personally. Just sort of synchronistically, the android meme wrote
about you
in that book.
No, no, Norm Mailer and I go way back. Matter of fact, I know what part two was about because he was going, as it was ostensibly planned to be, it was about, I fed him information about the Kennedy assassination, all that stuff that he was apparently going to be using in part two. Now, I didn't interact with Mailer much in the 90s. He was up in Providence, Rhode Island, and I was too busy establishing Lockdown Bob Rule, and I wasn't interested in what he was going to do, really, because it was puny, a puny operation compared to what I was doing. So, who knows, maybe by me not reinforcing it, he didn't have the inspiration anymore. He didn't know where to go with it. He was confused. You see, he was confused by computer technology. Remember, Mailer always played the devil's advocate. And I'm going to post where he played the devil, so to speak. I'm going to post an article on the McLuhan list within the next couple of weeks. Marshall McLuhan's Edgar Poe's Tradition, written in the 40s, Edgar Poe's Tradition. And, I put it into digital form so we can have it there. You can get the article in the book, The Interior Landscape, but that book is not that available for people. But in there, McLuhan gives the Luciferian tradition in Western literature, or in English literature, and French literature, too. And Mailer is part of that tradition in a way. So when you read that article, you'll find it interesting related to Mailer's possessed individual kind of role he played. So it was really about his own investigations into what was going on and into evil, and how he was seen as a lefty and then not a lefty. And so the main guy, Hugh Montague, he turns out to be double or triple agent by the end of Harlot's Ghost. So Hugh Montague is based on someone I know, and but Mailer identifies with that person, what is known as Harlot in the book. Now look, Harry Hubbard, H.H., okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there's Hubbard's Cove in Nova Scotia. H.H., the eighth letter, so that's the eight in my quadrant. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then Hugh is an H, and then Montague. H.M., 13-8-21, or 13-8-5. 13-8-8, you get 5, which is the pentad. Anyways, the there is that level of putting it in there, in my quadrant. Notice the working title of the manuscript is The Game. And LaRouche talks about the great game that came out of British intelligence, the managing of Soviet Union or the Middle East, Asia, Western Asia. The other thing is that the game is the information society, the game of providing information, and that's what the CIA monitors. McLuhan says in Understanding Media, the extensions of man definition is applied to the chapter on games.
Mm-hmm.
So the game is the controlling of the Android meme, the word that makes the market. It implodes by the 60s into what is the White House going to say about anything. And all the intelligence agencies are battling over who's going to write the script for the Android meme through the President of the United States. So that's the game.
Mm-hmm.
No longer plural, it's singular.
It's not based on literal information anymore. It's more based on the script that the intelligence agencies want to get to the president for their own reasons.
No. The word that makes the market is the only fact in a software environment. What the White House says is the fact.
Yeah. Well, regardless of whether it's based on real information or
data.
Yeah.
It's what McLuhan called myth. It's real. Whatever is said is real because we live inside the virtual reality, and virtual reality is real.
Yeah.
The whole point, technologies are real. They're first nature, approaching first nature. For humans, they're first nature. We call second nature. But people, it's like a belief system, engineering belief systems.
Right. Well, I was just thinking of this movie that came out several months ago called Burn After Reading, where the head guy, the chief guy of the intelligence agency, is getting reports from his agents on the street who are misinterpreting what they're seeing and bringing him information that he just can't simply make sense out of, and therefore he's making decisions based on information that's not even real to begin with, and knows that he doesn't know what he's doing, and knows that nobody knows what's really going on anyway. But you got to make a decision, so you just make a decision.
Right, that's the main pattern in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, that's you got to make a decision about what the Android meme needs. The Android meme needs human input. Needs programming up to a point, but the humans realize more and more that it's predetermined what they program, so it's hard to determine what the difference between the human and the Android meme.
Well, you know, if Obama came out tomorrow and said the recession's over, everything looks good, then we should see a rise in the stock market and everything should be fine, right?
Well, that's the problem. We're in a post-information society since 2000, so Bush acted out the post-information society. Now we're in the mystery body, and the Android meme is gone, pretty well obsolete, and that's why the janitor came in and took it over. His role is obsolete.
Oh, the word doesn't make the market anymore.
Right. That's where we got. I mean, that started in 2000, and so the word made the market by not saying anything particular.
Mm.
that's what Bush's charisma was. And that ran its course till 2006, and then people felt, well, we need a new kind of something, and the Democrats took over and thought that they'd program the Android meme with a better, more charismatic, informative presidential image. So they revved it up. Meanwhile, while they waited for Obama to become president, they didn't do too well as controllers of the Congress. They had a bad image. And then Obama's come in, and he's a catharsis of an attempt to find some kind of new charismatic regeneration of the Android meme, but it ain't going to work.
Well, the Android meme if we look at your chart, all the elements in your chart basically come out of the West, the Western mentality. And now the Android meme has, and the Western meme has pervaded the rest of the world. The rest of the world is pervading the Android meme, because we're seeing more of a globalism kind of a image.
That all happened in the 90s. That's globalization. That's what's dropped dead. Globalization.
Right, but not to the point where now you have, you know, an obscure film out of Bombay is going to win the Academy Award, and the president's a black guy, and I mean, the third world, Asia, is taking over the Western meme, even though it's already been invaded by it.
Well, as I said on the cash flow recently, talking about the inauguration day, I was saying people in the audience were looking at their iPhones and looking at themselves being broadcast on CNN, and I was talking about the juggling of the astral, the chemical, the TV, and the chip body by everybody, by the citizens and by Obama, because we moved past that. So there was a panic juggling of these things. That's what you're witnessing. You witnessed the after images of these landscapes. They're still there until we have cold fusion. But they have no power, and that's where we're at now. Nobody knows how to create an economy, how to create, regenerate the Android meme. The Android meme collapsed. That's why Rai is the precursor of the Android meme. That's the relevance of this chart. This chart predicts this period in history.
Mm-hmm.
It predicts the mystery body, which is the Dobbs quadrant, and you can see a lot of stuff in there referring to that, like the Second Coming. Now, what the heck is the Second Coming? What is Harlot's Ghost Part 2?
So we're drifting around. We got no wind in our sails, and we got no paddles to boot.
Well, maybe we're... If you mean by that drifting around the hyper-use of the four bodies for... chip body, TV body, astral body, and the chemical body, the hyper-anxiety, the hyper-revving it up while we wait for Steve Jobs to overcome his cancer. Okay.
Well, you remember when you and Nelson met with Tim Leary and it was videotaped?
Yeah, that was the middle of May 1993, the same weekend that Wild Palms was on.
Nelson, I think, makes the point that no one's at the controls, and they use a video clip of what looks like the space shuttle, and nobody's flying it, so it's just aimlessly bopping around in space and doesn't know where it's going.
Yeah, and that's a limited image. That would be an image maybe of the solar government, but the chart is the world government, the solar government, the universal government, and the mythic government, and Lockdown Bob Rule all being juggled. That's what was really going on in the 90s. Nelson was emphasizing just one aspect of government. But it was, remember, the hidden ground from 1990.
Do you think they're just as disoriented on the astral plane now as they are here on good old Mother Earth?
Yeah. That's, was it Mailer? Mailer might have said there might be a shake-up in the astral plane. I don't know if he said that, but someone else said that, and the Evergreens said that. Yeah, every landscape's being affected. So the 1990 to 2020 phase, which is on the Bob's formula chart, and this tiny note chart is a subset of pointing in that direction. But 1990-2020 is the mystery zone. So we were out of control since 1990 at the end of the Cold War, and we were drifting, and then we had the after image of the Android meme in two phases, the dot-com and then the mortgage bubble, software and hardware. They've run their course, and there's more than just that, but they're the figures for the TV landscape. So here we are in a situation that the chart is pointing to, and that's why I think it's very appropriate that that I'm here in Hawaii, where Rai started, maybe, or where Rai, you think of it, Hawaii is the ground of the American dream. It's the paradise implied in advertising, at least for the chemical body, right? It's a wonderful...
Worcester, when he was there, had a relationship with the Kahunas, didn't he?
Yeah. And when he was 22 or so, in the early 20s, he was on the radio, on the Navy radio station here in Hawaii, and the Kahunas liked him. I think they called him the Magic Boy. They liked how he did his program, and they initiated him. And he says, in retrospect, he didn't know really what was going on, but it was an important unconscious embed in his mind. It was an important factor in the channelings of cosmic awareness. So Rai, Ralph Doobie, died in Hawaii. But I'm just saying that the utopian image of the landscape of Hawaii is an anesthetic, a healing archetype. People come here to get refreshed. The whole healing aspect of the Hawaiian environment is an aspect of the Rai, because Rai was the original entity that created the disease and then offered the cure.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole healing shamanistic enterprise, someone knowing more than you and able to help you, is part of the Rai archetype. So it's interesting that we're talking about Rai and the Rai aspect of the chart, and we're doing it from Hawaii, and right after I arrived in Hawaii, Rai gave up the ghost. And at the same time, in August 2008, Paranoia published an interview with Worcester about the origins of our world in Rai. So it's all very timely.
Mm-hmm.
And we're past the post-information. So we're drifting from 1990 to 2020. And the first phase is the post-information society. You have the after-images and cobwebs of the information society as the Android meme, and then that passes into the cobwebs of hardware shelter, the real estate boom, and that's that. That's gone, and we move to the mystery body, which is post-information. I mean, the post-information society is something reacting to the information society.
Mm-hmm. It's even post-anthropomorphic physical.
Yes. And so you could say post-information is mystery. It's included. So all these phases are in the 1990 to 2020 segment, and the 2020 includes the antidote, the flipping out of the post-information quandary into a manifestation of mystery body cold fusion.
Mm-hmm.
Since it'll be a mystery for a while about how the hell this stuff works, or how could it be that we could have a frictionless technology? Okay, so...
Finish up with...
Here's an interesting point. Harlot's ghost. Harlot. The Whore of Babylon. You know, the Christian imagery of the fallen woman.
That's what I was just going to ask you about. Because here he writes, you know, the feminists think he's a macho asshole, which he probably isn't. I think they probably overreact to him. And then, but he writes this novel about intelligence agency and espionage, and then he calls it Harlot's Ghost.
Yeah, and so Harlot could be ISIS, right? That the creating the problem and then providing the cure is in the relationship of Rai and ISIS. ISIS comes down representing the realm of spirit, trying to get Rai back, but makes a deal. Says, let me hang out with you, and that might be her stooping to conquer as an archetype. Let me hang out with you. I'll give you children so you can keep this dimension going. So that is the deal made between Rai and ISIS so that ISIS can hang around.
And who are the children?
What?
Who are the children?
Any children. The ISIS
Were you talking about the human race?
Yeah, yeah.
They would be the children. We would be the children.
Yeah, the ISIS agrees to keep this dimension going by bearing children, setting up a co-creative relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So ISIS is part of this Rai conundrum. And so Harlot's ghost, if you think of Harlot as female, then that's Rai. I mean, that's ISIS in the Rai, ISIS yin-yang complementarity.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's after 1990. It's the android meme, and so it's the ghost of the android meme. It's the ghost of the relationship of Rai and ISIS. So I'm sure those thoughts came into my mind when I picked the title. It really fits.
Oh,
Harlot's
right.
Ghost.
The ghost is the cobwebs.
Yeah, of both Rai and ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
So that's appropriate. And you notice underneath, two spaces below that, is horny device. That's what the android meme is. It's a horny device.
Mm-hmm.
It's the triumphant seduction by second nature, making people feel that they're in control and not subject to environmental tyrannies.
Right. We did that talk about the AM/APB and the AP. B/AM. Now that that all then applies to this period here in the Dobbs quadrant and in the anthropomorphic physical, but we're actually post all of that too, huh?
Now we are. This chart was made in 95.
Yeah, I know, but when we did the AM/APB and the APB/AM, I thought we were doing the present.
Well, we are. We're explaining what the chart pointed to. The chart was made in 95. It's an image of what was going on in 95, the marketing of the afterimage of the Android meme through Netscape and AOL and the jumping into the chip landscape, right?
Mm-hmm.
But its punchline is the bottom line. Waiting for organic bodies, the spinning clothing crystals have danced the hex head. The spinning clothing crystals are the quadrophenic juggling of all the five quadrants, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Mainly the four quadrants, with the mystery body as hidden ground. The spinning clothing crystals are dancing away. That's what we've had from 60 to 90, and then it's after image, 90 on to 2012 or 2020. The after image is what the organic bodies are witnessing as they wait for cold fusion. So this is an ad. It's a energizer for a prayer for what's coming, the hexatic cold fusion phase.
Mm-hmm.
So we've arrived at that phase now.
Yeah.
And so the chart is actualized. It's experiencing its denouement. So is that something to do with what you were saying? You were saying the chart relates to now?
No. When we did the AM/APB plus APB/AM...
I was giving the big picture.
I thought we were talking about 2008. Or
yes, I was. And I was... I was pointing out the big picture that the chart anticipates, because we did that. We were talking about cold fusion in that dialogue and discussion. We were giving the bigger purpose of the meaning of the charts.
Right, and the B-O-Bob-A-M-A.
Right,
yeah.
And how we've arrived at Mr. Body, and my team is announcing cold fusion is coming in a year and a half.
Right.
And that goes around the date, August 26, 2008. And then the meeting in Kansas on October 22, 2008. I think we get into that in that special show or special session you just quoted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're now just talking about the Dobbs quadrant and how it fits into the tiny note chart and how it points to the show we've just been alluding to,
mm-hmm.
to the big picture.
Right. So I'm just noticing the magazine, Ben is Dead magazine, and that's in there because that's about as homeopathic as a medium as you can get to. Magazine's pretty homeopathic to begin with, and when you talk about something as popular as Ben is Dead, with a circulation of probably about 25, it's pretty homeopathic.
Yeah.
But I was wondering why you actually didn't put Flipside in there.
No, Ben is, remember, this chart is featuring mainstream archetypes, recognizable cliches from knowledge, public level. It's not trying to be esoteric.
Mm.
Ben is Dead was considered in the middle 90s to be the most successful zine.
Would that be an online magazine? Is that what
a
zine is?
No, it was before the computer.
What's a zine?
Don't you remember that the kids would make all kinds of teenagers, the slackers, the counterculture were putting out zines like Fact Sheet 5, and Flipside was kind of like a zine. These kids were just publishing their own media
mm-hmm.
in the late 80s and early 90s. It was the zine phenomenon.
Oh, okay.
And the most successful one among that world, it was called Ben is Dead.
Mm.
Now, you know, Ben is Dead fits. I mean, it's a post-information society in the Dobbs Quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And notice under Demon Nuclei, you got magazine/satellite. There's two media there.
Right.
Magazine and satellite. And the reason there's magazine, I may have explained it before, is it sums up the week's events, and it's a collage of all the different media. That's the role of the magazine. So Dobbs is, this chart is like a magazine. Dobbs is in the magazine zone. That's the medium that represents me, because I present a collage of what's happening across the quadrophenic juggling landscapes. So that's why magazine is there, and then Ben is Dead magazine is the final, it's like a post-information society, so the kids don't bother, like Walter Board, creating an underground newspaper in the 60s and hope it has some effect on the mainstream. Try to create a revolution. By the time of the 90s, the kids intuit a post-information society. They're not trying to create a magazine that changes society. They just want to create a magazine that celebrates their personal favorites. It's like a precursor of MySpace. It's just zines are people who share interests.
Yeah. Plus, with the desktop publishing, you know, anybody could make something in their bedroom anyway. You didn't have to be a publisher.
Yeah, and that's a little later. Maybe people made their zines on computers, but...
By 1990, I think desktop publishing was available.
And the zines probably were made on those early crude computers. But the autonomy from the mainstream Android meme is the meaning here. But the Android meme is allowing people to make their own personal, customized... narrow casting kind of media, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just for friends of similar interests. So,
well, what was the? Did Ben is Dead have a theme? Was it a music magazine or?
Yeah, most of these zines were collages, just people's whatever they were interested in.
Mm-hmm.
It could be specialist or it could be eclectic. So if I put in the word zine in Wikipedia, let's see what comes up. It says. Zine, an abbreviation of the word fanzine. So right there, it's a celebration. Or magazine pronounced zine. So a zine is most commonly a small circulation, non-commercial publication of original or appropriated texts and images. More broadly, the term encompasses any self-published work of minority interest, usually reproduced via photocopier on a variety of colored paper stock. Zines are written in a variety of formats, from computer-printed text to comics to handwritten text. Print remains the most popular zine format, usually photocopied with a small circulation. So, topics covered are broad, including fan fiction, politics, art and design, ephemera, personal journals, social theory, single-topic obsession or sexual content, far enough outside of the mainstream to be prohibitive of inclusion in more traditional media. So they're trying to do a Rumpelstiltskin move, trying to be unique, trying to be eccentric, trying to be narcissistic, which is exactly what the Android meme encourages. And once the computers became really handy in the late 90s, people started making websites. That was the update of the zine phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
The Android meme made anybody, not just someone who had access to a photocopier with a website with a computer. You could do any kind of small circulation, narrow casting information pattern.
But you still had to be... You had to be a little handy with the computer. You had to understand at least HTML, and maybe
there were a lot of courses for that. I know,
but I'm making a point here. You had to maybe spend some time with Photoshop and figure out how that works. You know, you had to commit yourself to it. Now, and there was an excitement. You know, hey, I'm getting on the internet. You know, and so you had a lot of the motivation to do that, but only a few people did. Maybe one in 25 people. Now with Facebook, I mean, you know, grandma's got her own website now.
Right. The Android memes made it easier and easier for everybody to feel empowered.
Yeah.
To be translated into second nature.
I can't believe how popular this Facebook thing is. I mean, and then I guess Twitter and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they've made it the thrill of participating and getting your message out on the internet has become about as easy as picking up the phone and calling somebody. And and you know, there's no real payoff in it in doing any of that stuff other than the thrill of participating, and then the novelty wears off after a while. But
no, listen, in the post-information society, if the post-information society is ground, then what is the figure? The figure is what's obsolete, information production.
Mm-hmm.
So people are given the opportunity to communicate when there's no context for communication to be connected to. It's all very tenuous. That's right. Why we have producer under Ben is Dead magazine. The Android meme encourages everybody to be a producer of communication, hyper-producer, hyper-communication, as the role of information and communication disappears. Everybody gets in the act. The people take over and, like McLuhan said, become the collective hydraulic jack and pump up the four landscapes, the communication vortex.
Yeah.
Keep going.
And but with respect to Facebook and all this stuff, I'm not even sure that the desire to communicate is the motivating factor. It's more like, you know, learning. It's like, hey, everybody's got a everybody's got a surfboard now. Let's go surfing. Look at me. I'm on the internet. You know, it's kind of that kind of thing.
Information. So everybody is replaying what the media environments did over thousands of years. So now you replay the history of communication as laid out in Finnegan's Wake and in McLuhan's writings, because McLuhan translated Finnegan's Wake. The Android meme was a replay, and part of the role, the seductive power of the Android meme is to make itself disappear so it makes you think you can replay the history of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Now we go to Chakwik Interaction,